You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening. I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us. Well, it is another election year. No surprises there. And there certainly has been a lot of, as always, a lot of rhetoric on both sides both sides of the fence. But an important topic that will be playing and still is, and is playing into this whole campaign year and has been even prior to the campaign is the rise of state sponsored terrorist threats or just organizations that have united for whatever cause. And many people fear that these groups are gaining more and more power. These groups may indeed infringe on Americans' rights. And there's so much more to that. That's why my guest today is author David Knoll. His new book is Vigilante Nation, How State-Sponsored Terror Threatens Our Democracy. And couldn't ask for a better time as we're entering the final leg of the presidential election. Sort of asked David to come on and just get his thoughts. Because obviously it was something that was very important to him as they put it between the pages of the book. David, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm sure you've sat there. I mean, you're a law professor, a lawyer by trade. So you're probably a little bit closer to the issue than many people, than most people are. I mean, they either get it in the newspapers or they get it through social media. Or when something happens, we've seen these groups rise up from almost total. Nobody knows who they are, where they started from, and all of a sudden they have a national prominence. But let me ask you: in recent history, is there anything that sticks out in your mind about how so-called vigilante groups are uniting, putting forth their message? The way they go about doing that, is this something that's fairly novel to America in the most recent history, or has this been something that it's been around forever?
Well, there's always been vigilantes, and you find them on both sides of the political spectrum. Sort of in the 1970s, you have groups like the Weather Underground, and there's a long history of right-wing vigilantism in the United States. But As you say, what we're seeing now is groups of vigilantes that are operating either with the explicit permission or, a wink and a nudge from leaders at the highest levels of the Republican Party. And so what we did in this book is we investigated the legal origins of that. And we said, why are we seeing these groups? And why are we seeing a surge of vigilantism now? In 2024, when, most of us thought that the nation had turned the page on these kinds of groups and that, they'd been sort of excluded from polite society. And, they're coming back and, they're becoming a major part of our politics again.
Is it possible then that from this point on, this is setting the groundwork that political campaigns, whether it be from the very top, and that being the President of the United States, or right down to local politicians, will use these types of groups to put forth their message or persuade people to see things their way? I mean, that's kind of a scary thought, is it not?
Yeah, and that's exactly the argument of the book, and we say that for two reasons. One is that, particularly on the Republican side, you see political leaders cultivating networks of vigilantes and militias and deploying them to impose their will when they, when they can't get the votes or when they can't persuade people to vote for them using ordinary means. And the second reason, which we really focus in on the book, is that kind of below the radar, states have been enacting laws that privilege vigilantes, and that send a message that they want them to be out there enforcing really a restrictive social ethos. And those laws are going to be with us no matter who wins the presidential election this November. They're going to stay on the books. They've been mostly enacted in red states. And they're really, they're sort of sending a message that vigilantes are operating with permission of the state, and that there's something that the state, that's why we call it state-sponsored terror, right? The state wants them out there and enforcing these culture war issues and making sure that the right people stay in power and are able to exercise power over society.
And David, some people would say that, I'm sure people listening to the broadcast, some would say, well, you know what, you know, okay, so be it. I've already made up my mind. No one's going to sway me one way or the other. After all, this is America. I have a free choice. If someone wants to expound upon a particular topic or they want to move an agenda, let it happen. I don't care. It's not going to sway me one way or the other. I get the sense after reading the book that that might not be the best thing for this country.
Yeah, for sure. And it's sort of, you know, the difference between, you know, vigilantism and ordinary political activism is that vigilantes are aggressively enforcing their understanding of the particular social order. So, you know, you can draw a distinction between sort of an ordinary political rally and the kind of events that we saw on January 6, 2021, right? We've all been to events, we've all seen events where people are passionately engaged in the political process. And, you know, we're not saying that that's vigilantism. You cross into vigilantism when groups use violence, right? When they use threats of violence, when they use terror to impose their will.
Right.
And that's what's really alarming, because we haven't really seen that since the civil rights era, right? We went through this long period where both of the political parties rejected vigilantes and said, even though they're a powerful tool that can be inserted into politics, right? We don't want to do business with them because they're just too unpredictable and they're just too dangerous to the rule of law.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're exactly right. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the 60s and a very turbulent time. And I think everybody, as you said, decided that that would not be what we need right now. There's enough violence going on. There was a lot of bloodshed, and we certainly don't want to go back to those days. I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voner, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is author David Knoll. His new book is Vigilante Nation, and we're talking about the uptick and the rise of vigilante groups forming across the country, putting forth agendas. And David, I'm using that word because I'm thinking, okay, that's what it is. But is it indeed an agenda that they're trying to push, or is there a better way of phrasing it?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You know, we trace this to the rise of Trump and to the sort of the birth of MAGA politics. And what we show in the book is that MAGA leaders have cultivated a network of vigilantes to help them impose their will. And impose their will is, right, it's not something that I'm coming up with. Those are words that Steve Bannon used on January 5th, 2021, when he was telling listeners of his War Room podcast that they had done everything to swing the election for Mr. Trump, and he instructed them on the 5th to go out and impose your will on Congress, and we know how that ended up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible that one individual, and I think you'd agree, but I want to get your take on this, that it doesn't take a million people, I mean, one or two influential people who can speak directly to a group, can bring these people together, David. That's what seems rather scary to me. In other words, the influence that certain individuals have over the masses. I know this might seem somewhat extreme, but I'm thinking of, didn't Jim Jones do that many years ago? I mean, how is it possible that one individual or a small group of individuals has that kind of influence? I mean, aren't people smart enough to make their own decisions?
Well, you know, that's the thing, is that we're operating in an environment where people pay less attention to what the formal political parties say and to what, the Republican Party of Massachusetts or, you know, these formal political groups do. And instead, we all live in this culture where we're encouraged to do our own research and to make our own judgments. And right, tragically, that can extend to things like whether an election is legitimate, right, or you know, whether the results of an election should be certified. And so, right, part of what's driving the rise of vigilantism is sort of the splintering of the old media environment and the splintering of these old power centers that allowed party leaders to sort to keep the fringes in check. And now we have this whole network of actors. You have sort of extreme lawyers. You have extremist media figures like Steve Bannon. You have members of Congress who really aren't committed to the institution and are really seeking to use their platform to stir up violence and to stir up their most radical supporters. And right, because media has splintered and because the way we do politics has splintered, they can reach an audience, and oftentimes they can make a lot of money by doing so, right? Some of these podcasts, if you look at sort of, what the top podcasts are on Spotify, there's some pretty terrifying stuff.
Where
we would think of as these fringe figures are attracting large audiences. And as you say, Al, it doesn't take huge numbers of people to really disrupt something like an election, right? A few thousand people. On January 6th, the Times recently had an investigation of a group of activists down in Georgia who were using the state's voter challenge law to try and disenfranchise other voters. Around a dozen people had filed more than 100,000 voter challenges trying to keep people off the voter rolls. You see this in book banning schemes that many states have put into place where states enact these laws, and then just a handful of people file challenge after challenge trying to pull what they deem to be controversial books from the bookshelves. So this is all about, we think of vigilantes as these actors who operate independently of the state and are doing what they want, but they're operating within a permission structure, right? And they're operating with legal supports that really magnify the power of their actions, and that's what we're trying to trace in the book.
Okay, so somewhere along the line, somebody comes up or someone has a fanatical thought in their mind, but they don't necessarily act on their own. And in spite of what you said, and I agree with you 100%, social media today gives almost anybody in this world a platform to reach thousands. But in other words, these vigilante groups or the rise of vigilantism cannot succeed without basically having the support of somebody in the political scheme, somebody who has influence, and as you said, even within the legal industry, to make sure that before they even make a move off the curb, that you're gonna be okay. We're gonna make sure that they can't challenge you. We're gonna make sure that you have, if we have to enact laws that'll suppress others and let this cause go forward. That's a scary thought, and I almost want to think that that's not what we were all about when we formed this country, is it?
Well, the history of this goes way back, and tragically, when you dig into the history, that there are vigilante schemes right at the beginning of the Republic. The most notorious is the Fugitive Slave Act of 1793, and what that law did is it sought to give slave owners the right to go into the North to recapture fugitives and return them to slavery.
Right.
Now, think about it, right? That was almost necessarily a vigilante scheme because Northern governments, at the time have limited or no police forces, right? They're not going to, the idea of a state is something that hasn't really developed yet, right? The government is extremely small. They're not going to devote their resources to recapturing human chattel on behalf of folks in the South. And so what the Fugitive Slave Act did is it gave slavers and their lawyers and their agents the right to go into the North and drag alleged fugitives in front of what the act called a magistrate. And then, if the magistrate agreed that a fugitive was in fact a fugitive for slavery, they would issue, a certificate that authorized the rendition of the enslaved person to the South. And then, you know, as we get later, following the Civil War, you know, vigilantism is just absolutely central to the enforcement of Jim Crow, because after the Civil War, there's all kinds of legal prohibitions on what the government can do. And one of the ways that Jim Crow governments got around those was by deputizing private parties to do the dirty work of enforcing white supremacy in the Jim Crow South. And so you'd see things like, you know, you'd have, you know, laws that formally applied to everybody, but there would be, you know, massive violence against Black Americans. And everybody knew that the DA wouldn't charge crimes, or that if a case went to trial, the jury would nullify and not return a conviction. And right, we're seeing right really, really troubling versions of that happening today. You know, somebody runs over protesters with their car, or some rights of, you know, somebody, you know, kills in alleged self-defense. And, you know, you're seeing some of these moves that, you know, that were very popular under Jim Crow being used again, to send a message that certain people will be protected, that these kinds of militia groups are welcome in politics, that, you know, that politicians have their back. And that's really when vigilantism becomes dangerous. Yeah, you know, there's always going to be cranks, right? There's always going to be people who take it on themselves to enforce the way that they think everybody should live. But it really becomes, right, a potent, dangerous force when those people think that they have the backing of elected officials, or they think that they have the backing of the state.
And I'm glad you used the example of the Jim Crow, because it was Southern plantation owners, wealthy plantation owners, who had vast tracts of land and a lot of money, and there was a lot at stake, no question about it. And slavery was how they got their product to market and to make that kind of money. So leads me to the next question. At the end of the day, apart from, you know, whatever may be in people's minds, money certainly is one of the top motivators here, is it not?
I think it is, but you know, I think part of the story here is that it involves changes in the Republican Party. So, you know, sort of for many decades, the party was this, you know, a coalition of social conservatives on the one hand, and you know, sort of free market libertarians on the other, and right, they included some national defense hawks in the mix. But there was always kind of this battle among the different factions of the Republican Party. That, you know, would sort of go to who had the upper hand and who was really setting policy. And what you're seeing in some of these vigilante schemes is that whereas before the free market side of the GOP really kept, you know, pretty tight control over what laws were being enacted and even what kind of rhetoric politicians were using on the campaign trail and in their communications with the public, the more radical fundamentalist side of the party has been emboldened by the rise of Trump and associated figures. And, you know, we read them as, you know, as almost saying, look, you know, we've supplied votes, we've supplied energy, we're the foot soldiers of the movement, right? It's time for our views to be put into place. And that takes you into vigilantism, right? Because, right, the kinds of commitments that they're interested in enforcing, right, some of the anti-LGBTQ stuff, their views on abortion, all of that requires a pervasive system of social control, right? More than the government wants to do, and more than the government is capable of. And so, right, as the hard fundamentalist right has gained power within the GOP, we've seen this, right, increased use of vigilante tools to enforce their understanding of how Americans should live.
And the scary part of all this, David, as I'm listening to you this evening, is the fact that when and if any of these groups gain that kind of influence and that kind of power with the support of individuals who we've talked about, whether at the top levels of government or at least in a position to protect or insulate these groups, is that that will indeed destroy democracy as we know it. And what do you do then?
Yeah, that's right. And sort of, you know, the risk is that if the vigilantes are sufficiently emboldened, then, you know, whatever happens in elections doesn't make a difference because, right, the vigilantes will be there to enforce their will. And we really start worrying about this when supports for vigilantism are embedded in state law. So one example that we talk about in the book is Texas's SB 8, which is its bounty hunter anti-abortion regime. One of the things about that law is that, right, it operates statewide, even in more liberal and more progressive jurisdictions where the local prosecutor might not be inclined, right, to devote resources to going after Uber drivers who provide a ride to someone who's seeking reproductive health care. But the existence of that regime and sort of the invitation that it holds out to vigilantes to enforce it means that what those DAs do doesn't make a difference, right? Because vigilantes are always there to enforce the scheme. And as you say, right, that's, you know, if we think about that from the perspective that voters should be able to vote for prosecutors who set policy, right, and are able to focus on the issues that voters care about, that's extremely troubling. So, you know, what do we do about this? You know, I think the long-term solution is expanded federal civil rights protections that protect some of these rights that the vigilantes are targeting. Of course, right, we also want to see, right, the DOJ, we want to see state agencies really paying attention to militia groups, right, and to vigilantes and making sure that they're staying within the law. But of course, right, getting to that long-term solution isn't something that's going to happen overnight.
Right.
And so in the book, John Michaels, my co-author, and I, right, we propose, right, a set of model laws that more liberal states can adopt, right, to protect their residents from vigilantism and to hopefully turn the tables on vigilantes who are reaching outside their state borders and trying to intervene in blue states.
I certainly, you know, we're running out of time, but I certainly hope that that is indeed something that people do take to heart, David, because this is just not, this is not the way that we want this country to run. You know, we all have our pet projects and the things that we'd like to see, but you know, there's a forum, there's a voting. We do that by voting in this country, and hopefully we keep that civil and we keep that sane. if there's such a thing anymore.
I don't want to be a total downer. You know, it's important to keep in mind that, you know, vigilantes and vigilantism they're a strategy that folks who are losing power turn to, right? You don't deploy militias. You don't start patrolling polling places with AR-15s if you're confident in your ability
to
win votes.
Exactly.
So this is something where, you know, if we stay committed to democratic norms, right, and if we stay committed to really, right, a normal political process, there's force in that, right? And there's force in our ability to say no. We've seen this before. We're not going back, right? This isn't how politics operates.
Exactly. Let's hope that that be the. Let's hope that that would sink in and carry the nation to, you know, where it should be. Again, my guest this week is David Knoll, a co-author of the new book Vigilante Nation: How State-Sponsored Terror Threatens Our Democracy. A great read. The book is now widely available. David, if people want to just get more information about you, your background, maybe pose some questions to you, how might they do that?
They can go to, they can pick up the book. They can go to knoll.org, and if by any chance they'll happen to be down in New York City on October 14th, I'll be speaking at McNally Jackson Books about this and related topics.
Oh, great, great. Again, the book is Vigilante Nation. My guest has been David Knoll. Regardless of, and I say this, and I think David would agree, regardless of where you are on the spectrum, it's a great read. It's eye-opening. It's just something that gives you a real sense of what's going on here in the country. And I always say you cannot make rational decisions unless you have all the information that you can then, on your own, think it through and then make the right decision. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly, I know sometimes you have to wonder about that, right, David? but I have faith in the American people. I really do. So I think they'll do the right thing. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.